are listening to the OpenPaddock.net podcast, motorsports commentary for fans by fans.
And good evening, everybody. Welcome to the 68th episode of the Open Paddock Podcast. Sean joining you as always, and I have a bit of a light cabinet tonight. We have Mike. Hello, Mike.
Good evening.
Yes, it's actually a sad state because we've had so many things going on, so many people on off the show, and we've had Doug, you know, for all the shows, and now here we be on the frickin' Americans Out of the Woodwork edition, and it's just the two of us. So it was supposed to be fan night, but because of all the news and everything, we had to push that back. So we're going to make that up another time. But we figured everybody would rather hear about all the stuff going on than come on and be like,
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, we do have a lot. And as the show mentions, we have a lot of American driver news in the IndyCar series. We're going to cover that. We're going to get to that right away. And then right after the IndyCar series, we have obviously a brief stint in rally, what I would like to call the Mickey Mouse stage, because it's not going to be very long. Mm-hmm. And then we'll go into more of the carnival.
You mean not very long, like Kimi Raikkonen's career?
And we also have some F1 stuff to talk about. Couple serious things, a couple really funny things, and then we're going to get into about a real quick tidbit on ALMS at the end. But Mike, did you hear today Scarlett Johansson is filing for divorce?
Yeah.
And
very nice.
She's moving in tomorrow. I asked her what took so long. So
kicking out the county beauty queen.
Yes, she's gonna have she will be awarded at a podium near you. So, oh goodness. Anyways, and that's why I'm not a comedian. So getting right into it though, a lot of worst kept secrets finally coming to fruition, but we're gonna go ahead and start with J.R. Hildebrand at Panther and the National Guard car, and finally they come out and say this after what a short, brief test session down in Phoenix, and it looks like they've made their minds up.
Yeah, you know, JR's been meeting with the National Guard. The National Guard has vetted him and decided he's the guy they want to sponsor. They've been doing testing. We've been hearing his name in conjunction with the ride at Panther for a long time, but they've never really, until today, closed the door that Dan Weldon will be back. And what's his name is a good way of putting it, because unfortunately, what's his name? That may be how we refer to him next year, because he's not going to be in the IndyCar series.
He's not going to be?
I'm just wondering. Okay, that's not a prophetic statement. It's not a statement made with knowledge. It's a statement that's just looking at the grid the way it is. Who's going to hire him? He's going to have to be willing to take quite a pay cut to do that. He may end up having to drive at Casey Kane Motorsports next year, or whoever it is that Nelson Piquet Jr. is going to be driving for.
Oh!
Oh, in a truck.
Yes. Yeah, that's what you say. You say, Piquet Jr., you just won a huge court battle against Renault's Formula One team. What are you going to do with it? Go to Disneyland? Nope, I'm going to drive me a truck.
Nice. Yeah, that was an interesting one. We talked about that last week, and Nelson is done with Formula One, and he's decided he's going to move on to NASTruck.
Yeah!
Anyway.
Go have fun with Travis Pastrana.
You know, J.R. Hildebrand being signed at Panther, this is really... I'm so excited about this pairing. We've kind of talked about it in the past, but Panther is something of the All-American team. They are something of the underdog team that was able to make things work with Sam Hornish. They've had, what, 3 straight years of second place at Indy. Mm-hmm. They've had a lot of good results out of the team. And getting a young, talented American driver to grow with that team as they continue to try and push towards being one of the premier teams in the series, I'm excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I would be concerned about, though, is if they're going to try and go about next year with just one car. And that is Panther's modus operandi. They have tried the one car thing for a long time. They're convinced that that's the best way. They seem to be convinced that that's the best way to run their team. I'm hoping that there's a possibility of getting a second car there, at least on a part-time schedule.
Mm-hmm.
But we will have to wait and see.
Yeah, and the thing that's interesting about this is it's a multi-year deal, is it not?
Yes, that's what they've said, a multi-year deal. Now, I didn't catch anything other than multi-year. Did you see anything that actually talked about the length of the contract?
I think the general multi-year term was what I also caught on. I looked, but couldn't find specifically the length. But nonetheless, even if it is only a multi-year deal, that's still good for the team.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm really excited. Like you, I can't wait to see him race. I think he's going to go a long way to obviously helping, the ovals should help out with, the road courses and everything. And I think that he'll be definitely somebody to watch on some of these ovals, especially seeing how well the team, like you said, was doing last year. So yeah. It'll be awesome to see.
Yeah, I'm excited, like we've talked about. He was the Indy Lights champion in, I believe, 2009.
Yes, 2009 Indy Lights champion.
So it's another good thing to see the Indy Lights series actually provide a pipeline to IndyCar. Rafael Matos came into IndyCar through that. I mean, several drivers have come in through it. Many have not shown as well. We're hoping great things for JR so that that road to Indy ladder can be seen as a good way to get a driver, especially a young, talented driver like him. Getting somebody who I think is very marketable. The National Guard thought he was getting more than just a couple of token Americans in the series who really aren't doing much. I love Ed Carpenter. I really do, but I have to understand that he's never going to be the series champion.
Mm-hmm.
He may win an oval race here or there one of these days, maybe not next year with Sarah Fisher's team. Love Sarah, but yeah, gotta face reality there.
Gotta be a little realistic.
I think it's great that Michael Andretti has had American drivers on his team for several years now. But let's be honest, Ryan Hunter-Reay is the one that has the most chance at winning on that team currently. Wondering what's going to happen with Danica going into next year. It's good to see new talent coming into the series and being paid to come into the series, not bringing sponsors and everything of that nature. So what fun.
Yeah. And just as a refresher, I mean, if you look at what Hildebrand did in 2009 when he won the championship, I mean, we're looking at 4 wins, 6 poles, 11 top fives and 12 top tens and just 15 starts. Mm-hmm. So he's got some great talent, and also, if you remember, he's even went out and tested with Force India in the Formula One circuit. So
nice. Yeah.
The guy has some serious street cred for hustling a car, and it'll be really great to see him in a car like this, the Panther. So I'm excited.
Yeah. Indeed, and carrying on the excitement, we're hoping that. We'll see the National Guard car with a huge American flag draped over the engine cowl like they did with Sam in the yellow Pennzoil car. But, hey, beggars can't be choosers.
Indeed. Well, but that's not all.
Yeah, speaking of Americans, Frickin' Americans Coming Out of the Woodwork Edition brings you another juicy rumor. Chip Ganassi Racing Teams, they have an announcement scheduled on Thursday. It will be streamed live on IndyCar.com, though I haven't cut the time, so we can look into that and tweet it out to the loyal army.
Mm.
But here's the deal. First of all, Chip Ganassi Racing Teams is not the name that you typically associate with Target Chip Ganassi Racing. So something's going on there. As rumors have been saying for a while, a second satellite team is going to be formed. That's what we're expecting to hear. And we're expecting to hear that Graham Rahal and Charlie Kimball will be driving for Ganassi in 2011 as a satellite team. Out of Don Prudhomme's shop, his NHRA shop that's not been used. Last year it wasn't used because he bailed out of NHRA.
Nice.
Due to sponsor loss and things of that nature. So that's the juicy rumor. What do you think?
My name is Mr. Kimball. You remember Kindergarten Cop?
Nice. No, I don't. I don't think I ever watched that movie.
You suck. Just kidding. It's a great movie. You should watch
Sorry.
It. It's not a tumor.
The governor in a comedy role does not impress me.
Oh, you're fired.
I prefer when he's pinning people to the wall and saying, stick around.
Nice. Nice. It's good, too. Well, I'm really excited. It's, you know, we've been waiting a long time for the announcement, and they're finally going to announce it after what seems like to be, you know, a million years. And I think it's great that you have young talent in these cars as well. So, you know, you're not mm-hmm. looking at, you know, guys like, who, I hate to say it, but Servia. Sorry, I know he's your boy.
Yeah.
Or any of them. You know, you're not looking at some guy, Davey Hamilton or something, coming in this team. You've got Graham Rahal, who's a, you know, up and coming driver, American driver, mm-hmm. probably has the best talent. Out of the up-and-coming Americans.
Yeah.
And then you look at Charlie Kimball, again, another chance to show the IRL. Oh, my God. I'm fired.
Oh,
I'm firing myself.
No.
I'm firing myself.
Don't say that word.
I'm getting off now. I'm firing myself, and the show is over.
I hear the Champ Car World Series fans with their pitchforks outside the door right now.
I know something's restless outside of the Greater St. Louis headquarters here.
No.
Okay, let me refocus here. Kimball will prove that the road to Indy ladder can work, and that young talent can get onto really good teams.
Yeah.
And I think that this is good. And I really look forward to see him on track with Graham and see how that team does compared to the Papa team. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be surprised if Graham puts on a good showing, or Kimball even for that matter, if he comes out and surprises people. Mm-hmm. I think a Mr. Scott Dixon may be put on notice.
Ooh.
I think.
Well, yeah, it's been theorized for a while that Dario may not be long for the IndyCar series. A lot of people are saying that he's going to be around for the new car in 2012, and that'll be it.
Hmm.
Who knows? Who knows? Because that's completely up to Dario,
yeah.
And he seems to be rather flighty in his decision-making process at times.
It's the hair.
Yeah, no. Case in point, NASCAR.
Yeah, right. Yes. Well, I think after what he said at the Autosport Awards, I mean, he said right now, you know, and again, flighty, yes, but he says that he's really digging IndyCar right now and is really probably as passionate as he's ever been for the series. So who knows?
And that's good for the series, because having a dominant guy like Dario, who's, you know, he's likable, his hair is questionable, but
no, it's not. You watch your tongue. You're just jealous because we can't have hair like that.
And the other side of it, you see Target Chip Ganassi Racing, or Chip Ganassi Racing Teams, whatever they're going to call their satellite operation, Don Prudhomme Chip Ganassi satellite operation, whatever. Let's think up an acronym.
Tough.
Yeah. Anyway, you're the one for that, you know.
Oh God. Oh, yes. Here it goes.
Anyway, So Graham Rahal, talented up-and-coming American driver who has already proven that he can win in the series. Mm-hmm. Charlie Kimball, let's talk about Charlie for a second. He claims he's an American driver. He was born in England and lived a lot of his life in the States. Mm-hmm. Started racing karts in California, if I saw his bio right, and has bounced both sides of the pond racing as he's developed. So he's listed as an American driver as well. May have a slight accent. I'm not sure.
Nice. Nice.
So having both of those guys on the team, really, to me, it sends notice to guys like Penske, who their method of getting drivers is to scalp the best talent. Mm-hmm. And Ganassi, even though he has his two drivers set in stone, is not interested in just letting other teams pick up that talent instead of allowing him to pick them up when he needs them. He's signed these guys up. He's locked them in. And it will be much harder for, say, Roger Penske to come scalp a Graham Rahal next year.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, well, we shall see. I'm excited. And we said, what, tomorrow on IndyCar.com, Thursday.
So that Thursday. Would be, you know, whenever you receive this recording and whenever you get it pushed out to our loyal masses.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
About that. all right, so are we done there?
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we're going to talk about speed, because that's the essence of motorsports is speed. A couple other things figure into that, but again, you're not winning races if you're not going fast at some point. We have heard Randy Menard again. He's just looking at anything possible to keep the momentum going, because let's just admit the series is absolutely on a roll right now with everything it has going on. So, you know, the drivers, the Americans coming back into the series pretty hard for some pretty good teams. We've got, you know, new cars, new schedule, new philosophy. And now we have Randy Menard coming out and saying that it is time to start looking at breaking speed records. What?
This one came out of left field. Hey, wait a second. Can I tell you something I'm happy about with the IndyCar series?
What's that?
Stuff comes out of left field.
Nice. Exactly.
No pun. You know, yes, some stuff gets telegraphed, but for the most part, the IndyCar series has always had this this method of telegraphing their punches. Well, this one, yeah, cold cock across the jaw. It's broken completely. We saw an article on speed.com or speedtv.com, whatever they want to call themselves, talking about Randy Bernard saying he wants the speed record gone, and he wants it gone in 2011.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
That is, oh yeah, this year. What?
Yeah, okay.
Do you see what the speed record is? And yeah, do you see what they've been running lately?
Yeah, single lap record is Ari Leyendijk, 237.498. Four-lap average is 236.986. Of course, we're talking about Indianapolis here.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, if you want to approach that, you got to bump your speed up by about 12 miles an hour over what seems to be the average lately. yeah, we did get in the 230s this year, didn't we? Or 229s. I can't remember what it was.
229, I think, was the – pretty sure it was 229, yeah.
Whatever it was, everybody did when Helio did that this year. So, yeah, that's quite a bump. And what they're talking about is they're investigating what it will take on the technical side mm-hmm. to get these cars capable of doing 237.
Exactly.
So on the technical side, what do you have to do? They're talking about bringing back a 3.5 liter just for Indy. And possibly going to methanol again, just for Indy.
That's ridiculous. Oh, man.
That, yeah.
Duh. this is, you know, it, not only did it come out of left field, but it's just absurd.
I'm shocked by this. One of the things that, okay, maybe this is another attempt by the current management of the IndyCar series to say how much different the current management is from the previous management. Because for decades, 230 was seen as the upper ceiling, the safety ceiling. Nobody can go above this. We're going to make sure that we keep it under it. We prefer 225. Mm. And now we're moving into a realm where they're looking at what makes this sport appealing is the danger, the speed. Now, we'll have to question that a little bit. Yeah, I want to see it. But is there a reason that we said 237.5 was too fast?
Yeah, I think it was when somebody impacted the wall with their squash and it smashed.
Well, you get a car up in the catch fence and they're doing 240. That car could get into the crowd.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This year's Conway accident all of a sudden becomes a lot scarier.
Yeah, and oh, sheesh, I don't know that this seems premature to even be talking about it for 2011.
Yeah,
what doesn't seem premature is talking about it for 2012 when they have a new car that. That the safety aspect of the car has been incorporated, that the car is lighter, so therefore will have much less mass and inertia to push through the fence. I don't know. I don't know exactly what to think about this. Yes, I want to see it, but I'm also leery of what that might mean because the fact of the matter has to be understood. When you have deaths in IndyCar, it brings a very large spotlight, a very large magnifying glass onto the workings of the IndyCar series by Bleeding Heart Media, who don't quite understand it, but it's another thing to pick at. Just take, for instance, when the Baja truck race in California this year when several people died. And then the spotlight came in and nobody quite understood why are these morons so close to the track?
Oh, well, that was just ridiculously close, though. I mean, they're like, you know, that's rally racing, you know, on the side there. I mean, that's just a whole different breed altogether. There's nothing to protect them.
Yeah, indeed. Well, and, you know, you look at several European rallies and see that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Especially when you go back to the, you know, the Audi Quattro days.
Yeah. Let's go back to the Audi Quattro when you had in Finland a 600 horsepower raging monster just screaming across gravel and you have people not even five feet away from the car. I mean, really?
Seriously. it's like Moses is on the front of the car with his staff. Parting the seas of people.
Oh, exactly.
It's ridiculous.
The Audi going through the crowd like a hot knife through butter.
Yeah, gotta get that picture. Oh, my leg.
Yeah, exactly. Ow. Nobody told me it was actually going to hit me.
Oh. So, you know, the things that really stand out. Okay, first of all, the first question has to be asked. Is this a PR stunt or is this an actual possibility?
For this year?
Yeah, for this year.
This year it has to be a PR stunt. I don't see it happening this year. I mean,
I don't either.
The technology, I just don't think that car can do it.
Well,
unless they do things to the engine.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I'm questioning if they can get, you know, 40 workable engines tuned to that special Indy spec.
Mm-hmm. Like having an Indy special engine, like Indianapolis special.
Yeah, that's what it would have to be because they're talking about possibly having to burn methanol. The size of the engine would be significantly different. Do they have the parts and the wherewithal to make a special Indy spec engine that doesn't cost the teams, you know, a buttload of money?
Mm-hmm. Or maybe just have the league try to put together that's not going to work.
Well, the other thing that has to be mentioned is Apex Brazil. Part of that whole thing is the ethanol sponsorship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, methanol and ethanol are not the same thing.
No.
Not at all. Though I love the smell of methanol mixed with dirt.
Oh,
it's wonderful.
Get out of here. This is not the soapbox.
April is coming and USAC schedules came out this past week. I am a happy boy.
Oh, Lord.
Anyway, methanol, I don't think Tony Kanaan can do those ridiculous commercials where he's dancing. I don't think he can do that to methanol.
Yeah. No. No comment.
No comment.
I will not. I will not go there, as I may be villainized.
Okay, then villainize me. Tony, you can't dance, and I'm sorry, bud. As much as I like you, you can't act all that well
either. I don't know. Wasn't methanol the reason for all the fires?
Well, not necessarily.
Or part of
methanol. Well, methanol and ethanol. The biggest problem with them is they burn without sight. You can't see methanol flames. Ethanol, you can, because they've added a gasoline additive to denature it, so it's not, you know, 100%, you know, ever clear.
And,
yeah, FDA kind of requires that, you know. Well, anyway.
I started to say, given the way that Tony Kanaan, you know, apparently cannot dance, and given the way that his cars like to erupt, he may get some pretty innovative dance moves when everybody's like, why is he swatting like that?
Man on fire dance.
Exactly.
Pioneered by Tony Kanaan.
Yes, I'm sure the last person that would want to see that would be Tony Kanaan.
Yes, indeed. It's kind of like Icky Woods in the NFL, man.
Oh.
It's going to do the shuffle.
Nice.
Anyway, yeah, but methanol, it always burned clear. And, you know, if they do go back to methanol for just one race or what have you, I wouldn't be surprised to see them put the same denaturing element in it, some gasoline or what have you, to make it burn, you know, orange or whatever, or something exciting, you know, the colors for the, you know, 2011 Indianapolis 500 logo.
What? What the hell was that?
Okay.
151C. You brought the show into disrepute, Mike.
Ah, yes. And when we get in the F1 segment, we'll take F1 and put them into disrepute because just loving the new changes they have to their regulations.
Oh, yes.
We'll get into that later. That's a teaser.
What else do we have?
Oh, I was going to ask, what does this say about Brian Barnhart and his future with the series? Because part of this is the old regime of the IRL that has depressed the speeds out of safety and such. But if they're pushing for doing, you know, breaking, you know, it's a new track record. If you want to play that Tom Carnegie clip over the loudspeakers at Indy in May, it means that they've done some investigating, I would think, to say that it's possible to go those speeds and not jeopardize the drivers and the fans.
Yes.
Still, I think 2012 is far more likely than 2011, but does this say that Brian Barnhart's on his way out?
Well, it either says he's on his way out or he's been told to shut up and deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like, hey, guess what? I'm not the new sheriff, or, you know, the sheriff's not in town anymore. I'm the new one. You know, we do things the way I want to do them. And, you know, you can either deal with it and help me, or you can get out of here. So, or I will send you out of here.
Yeah.
Because we already know people hate him.
Yeah. So. I would think, though, that that would have been the first thing that would have happened at the end of the season if he was truly on his way out the door, unless they don't have somebody thought up to replace him, if that is the way they're going. I would say it's the fans' choice. You know, that's one of the things the fans have been making a lot of noise about, you know, Robin Miller certainly among them, saying that Brian Barnhart needs to go. And the team supposedly have been on that bandwagon as well. So, apparently he has some naked pictures of somebody in the Holman George family.
Yeah.
But, that said about the Holman George family, according to this article on Speed TV, they said that, quote, some of the Holman George family has been very adamant about going for the speed record.
Well, that'll be cool. I mean, I'm not trying to degrade the chance or what he's saying. All I'm saying is, okay, if we're going to do it, let's do it. Let's not, you know, I hope that, like you said, it's not a PR kind of gimmick. But I think.
And then the next year we're back to 220.
Yeah, exactly.
No! Yeah.
Don't make this a 100th anniversary thing only.
Yeah.
You know, because I could see how that could kind of play into the PR aspect of it too. Even if they do it, they're like, oh, look at the 100th anniversary of the Motor Speedway, and we just set a new track record. And it's like, oh, nice. That would be kind of cool, but you need to do it. Don't just say it and not. I mean, you know, if we're talking going fast, I want to see it. I don't want to be teased.
2012 is a far more interesting proposition in that they'll have control over the amount of boost that the engines can have. And they've already talked about, you know, from race to race, changing the amount of horsepower, basically, that the engines can produce.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, you know, when you're going from street course to road course to oval, having different levels of power. So on the ovals, maybe you have 500 horsepower. On the road courses, you may have 700 horsepower with an additional 50 horse boost. Or I shouldn't say boost, an additional 50 horse push to pass.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can manipulate it like that, then you can come to Indy and give them 700 horse.
Hmm.
That would be interesting and far more plausible, I would think, than trying to do it in 2011 with kind of a resurfacing a very old engine or what have you.
Yeah. So. I don't know. Exciting. We'll see. It is exciting. It's just good to hear it because, like you said, you know. All right. So, all right. Well, what else we got here? Are we ready for Ryan Hunter Ray?
Yeah, what do you think about that?
Oh, that's just repulsive.
Okay. IndyCar Garage, another blog, might I add, of the IndyCar series. If you're not familiar with their work, run over to IndyCarGarage.com and take a look. But they put up an article this week that connected the dots between several tweets that we've been seeing across the Twitter sphere. And their dots also included some GoDaddy press releases and all this kind of stuff. And like I said, their dots, they've connected together. They think that Ryan Hunter Ray is going to be a GoDaddy girl next year.
Oh, my goodness. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well,
why?
That
doesn't even fit into the marketing scheme of anything.
Yeah, I don't know. How should I put this? Maybe these tweets and everything are reading way too much into it. Maybe GoDaddy's an associate sponsor next year. But putting it all together, Ryan Hunter Ray was at the GoDaddy Christmas party this weekend and was sending out some tweets, you know, for example, attended a killer Christmas party last night like no other. Excited to work with such a great group of people. Now headed to sunny Florida. Then later on, we got a tweet from, can't really tell who that is. We'll have an announcement soon. You don't want to miss anything. I can't give many details. And that, I think that was from GoDaddy's people. So, interesting.
Yes, it is.
Possibly nothing.
What if it's just maybe GoDaddy upping their sponsorship of the total Andretti package as opposed to just Danica or RHR? I mean, yeah, maybe it is.
It very much could be an umbrella associate sponsorship or something of that nature. So reserve judgment until we see it.
Yes.
But I think Ryan Hunter Ray could pull off the whole mini skirt over the wall thing.
I'm now scarred for life.
would be quite the departure from the posh Izod sponsorship of the previous season, though.
Yeah. You've got me dumbfounded tonight. That's impressive.
Well, then we should probably move on to the next topic.
Yeah, and this is my favorite news probably of the week, I think, is that Mazda has upped its forget Up. It's taken over the road to Indy and is now the title sponsor of, you know, of all the things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
of
know,
the lights of USF 2000 of Star Mazda.
Yes. And if you were actually at the, if you ever at, Open Paddock anytime this week and saw Doug's fantastic article, kind of wrapping it up. And then his, weekly column for the Road to Indy, you saw a lot of the, what do you want to call it? A lot of special, you know, a lot of, further details, really, I guess, mm-hmm. is what I'm trying to say on this stuff or on this announcement. And it's just going to be awesome because not only are they bringing a title sponsor and making it actually seem somewhat legit, and I'm not saying the NASCAR Nationwide Series, whatever the hell that is, you know, mm-hmm. now we have the Mazda, because they make sports cars, Road to Indy. And I think that, you know, you've got a title sponsor, which is good because now you can look at some money for the series or for the different series. And also, oh, yeah, it's actually relevant to the fact that, yes, we are racing cars, not selling really crappy insurance. And so, you know, they've in the announcement, they're coming out with a full complement of different scholarships for it. Mm-hmm. And also something that I think may interest you there, Michael. What is that?
Indeed. Mazda is also building a sprint car engine next year, and that's close to my heart. I'm going to have to keep an eye on that.
Mm. Yeah. But, I mean, what's to say? I mean, you've got a huge – I mean, that's a huge announcement, especially somebody like Mazda who has so much – not only can they offer you the scholarships and the sprint car engine or whatnot, but now you're looking at also, okay, in 2013 when we get this new lights car – or we're starting to look at getting this new lights car put together, you know, what level will Mazda have in that? You know, I mean.
Yeah, I you know, let's take this one piece at a time.
I can't help it.
Now, you're excited. First of all, Mazda came out with a cool logo, Mazda Road to Indy. It's nice and everything to have the Mazda name on there because we've heard the name, the term Road to Indy before. It was slapped across all of the USAC drivers for several years and didn't have much to show for it other than maybe Sarah Fisher and Ed Carpenter. And Ed Carpenter was going to be an Indy car no matter what. I mean, it didn't matter if he came through USAC or what have you because of his relationship with the Holman George family. He's in. Okay. Now, breaking down the scholarships, like you said, there are already several scholarships in place, but there wasn't one taking Star Mazda into Indy Lights. The Star Mazda actually put you in Grand Am, the scholarship that Mazda had. So now all the sponsorship or the scholarships go from tier to tier to tier. I think there's a Skip Barber scholarship to get into USF 2000, USF 2000 to Star Mazda, Star Mazda to Indy Lights, and Indy Lights will get you into Indy Car. Very nice. Now, where does sprint car engines play into this? Well, that Mazda is big on the grassroots, and that's something Doug hit on in his article, and I think it's very important to note. Mazda is not looking to get into IndyCar, into the big cars. They're looking to sponsor and support the grassroots racing. Maybe someday that grows further, but at this point, it's Mazda for Road to Indy, and that's their goal and their niche.
That I don't like that.
Yeah, I would prefer they bump up their level. Now you're talking about the 2013 car. There has started to be a lot of talk now that the 2012 car is well underway. That the 2013 will be a new Indy Lights car, mm-hmm. which is very necessary because the current the up and coming 2012 Indy car will be much cheaper than the Indy Lights chassis.
Nice.
Yar. How does that happen? And then also they'll need to address the fact that many people say that the Indy Lights car does not prepare you for Indy car.
Well, that's a true statement because if you look at that car, compare it to what's actually on track. I mean, mm-hmm. it's you know, I don't know. I just don't really see. I could be wrong. It gives you the feeling of being in an open wheel car, I guess. But I just really don't see. I mean, you know, I just don't see how that. I just don't
well,
see
but
it.
obviously the concern is the performance level is so much lower than the Indy cars. Unless, of course, you're, you know, at the front of the pack in Indy Lights and you're chasing the heels of Milka Duno's lap times. There's really no comparison. That said, it would be very nice to have, obviously, the Indy Lights car be a representative of what you'll get into IndyCar.
Oh, yeah.
Just at a lower power level, where the setup data and everything that you develop in your mind in the Indy Lights car can somewhat be translated into the IndyCar. And that's a lot of the big concern, is that the performance level is so different, and then also the setup data is just completely non-transferable. And, you know, being able to set up an Indy Lights car doesn't make it so you can set up an Indy car.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, because, harkening back to that crap NASCAR, if you look at their nationwide car and you compare it to their actual Sprint Cup car, those two are very similar. And, you know, underpowered, like you said. So, you know, IndyCar does need to do that. And that's not just we're trying to be NASCAR thing. No, that's just, hey, if you want to groom the talent right, then how about you get them in something that's a little more, a little more realistic, I guess.
Yeah. For several years, the Busch cars, the nationwide cars or whatever you want to call them, the Busch cars were running faster lap speeds than the Cup cars at the plate races. Just because they didn't have the same regulations and what have you.
So. Yeah. Well, that'll be interesting, though. I think you're right, though. It just needs to be more representative.
Well, some of the things that I want to see from the Road to Indy program, definitely I want to see it continue to gain respectability and credibility in IndyCar. I would love to see, you know, we've harped on Andretti a lot. Andretti is the prototype for an organization in IndyCar that respects Indy Lights. You know, they brought up J.K. Vernay. They brought up, Charlie Kimball. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of guys that have come through that AFS Andretti whole matchup. Andretti's made a commitment to growing IndyCar drivers from the grassroots up. Mm-hmm. And I want to see that same commitment from other teams. And I would hope that in the future, this Road to Indy program would make good incentives for teams to partner with these, Road to Indy programs.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I think is very key is, like I said, making it respectable, making it credible, such that you can start to make and also making it so, like we're talking about, the cars were fairly compatible, in that if you got experience in an Indy Lights car, then you're ready to drive an oval in an Indy car.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I think that the IndyCar series wants to do, I'm not sure if they're necessarily ready to do it just yet because of the credibility of the Indy Lights program, but I think they want to make it mandatory that you run some lights oval races before you step into a big car.
Yeah. Can you blame them?
No, not at all.
Yeah,
not
exactly. Really. Exactly. I mean, I think that's a good thing to do because...
Well, I think the fans crave to have that again. Heck, it used to be that you had to have, you had to have references. You had to be able to, you'd have to have a veteran driver recommend that you drive the Indy 500.
Wow.
There used to be a whole lot more to it. If people didn't feel safe driving around you and they were Indy veterans, you would not get to drive at the Indy 500 because you would simply not be allowed to enter, competition.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's just the way it goes. And time has changed that, and sponsorship money has certainly changed that as well.
Yes, unfortunately, Mr. Benjamin's former Prez Binge actually has a lot more speaking power than Alan Sir Jr. does anymore, which can be sad. So, I don't know. Wait a second, are we done with IndyCar?
I think we've exhausted IndyCar for the evening. Do you have anything you want to make up?
IndyCar
PR conference.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We were going to talk about that.
Yeah, just briefly, we wanted to mention there is a PR conference currently taking place in Indianapolis. I believe it wrapped up today, which is Tuesday, where media bloggers, the guys, Paul from More Front Wing was there. Several people came in and gave presentations, talked about what was important to IndyCar, talking about how they can up the image of IndyCar through press relations, through bloggers, through fans who continue to be excited about the sport. I guess Robin Miller went in and dropped a bomb. He dropped an F-bomb on the crowd, basically saying, F the media, it's all about the fans.
Nice.
So,
well, it's a true statement. True statement.
It has to be a true statement. If you're not attracting fans, it doesn't matter how the media portrays you.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, if the fans are there, the media will portray you in a positive light.
Indeed. I agree. So, and that also, that all wraps up with the survey that we asked everybody to take, and all that, just so, you know, because this is a real chance that the series has given us. No, the series are you going to go to, you know, whether it be MLB, NFL, any of that, where they're going to actually walk in, say, oh, bloggers, and say, how can we make life easier for you, and how can we maximize the potential that you offer as the fans? And you're not going to have that with anybody else. You know, even something like, baseball. I mean, nobody cares about baseball really anymore. I mean, I guess I should kind of speak for myself, but it's just not really there anymore. I don't like it. I used to like it a lot, and then after all the strikes and everything, I just don't care about it anymore. I'll follow my Cubs, but that's about it. I don't sit and watch, you know, just random games. But it's good, and it's good for IndyCar to come out and say, you know, and us be able to provide things to them as well to try to make that a smooth transition, if you will, or, you know, just help the teams, I guess, embrace us, or, you know, help everybody just kind of embrace the whole idea. So really cool, and thanks for everybody out there who put that on, or who put it on this week and helped us out.
Now, the only other thing to note in IndyCar is that Oriel Servia and James Hinchcliffe just wrapped up their test with Newman Haas today.
Nice.
So we hope to hear good things for both of them for 2011, but, you know, that would be hoping a whole lot. It would be sweet to hear about two contracts, but it is Newman Haas, and they aren't the team they used to be.
No. And I would really like it if I could see Hinchcliffe.
Oh, yeah.
I'll pick Hinchcliffe.
Well, let's get into this, man. You want talented and marketable drivers in the series. I think you've got that in Graham Rahal and Charlie Kimball and J.R. Hildebrand and James Hinchcliffe. Those are guys you want in your series, and you want them desperately because they're intelligent. They're, you know, to the ladies, they're attractive, I guess, you know. Across the board, but anyway,
way to preface that one. We knew where you were going. It's
You know,
I know that the whole reason you were mad was because you wanted Franchitti's hair. So I knew it.
Jealousy.
Yeah.
All I want for Christmas is a new haircut.
Anyway. Yeah, right.
You know, you've got these guys, and the series is hard pressed to get them into seats, and if they can get there on their own merits, you know, the series obviously benefits greatly from having guys like that to represent the series. I think Ryan Hunter-Reay would have been a great guy if they got him a little younger into the IndyCar series.
Yeah.
But I think he's kind of at the end of his young marketable life, and he's going into a stage in his career where he has to have dang good results to really stick around much longer.
Yeah, I like Hinchcliffe, so yeah. I really want to see him get a ride because he has everything that a race car, just like you said, everything a race car driver has. He's great with the fans. He does the social media thing. He's funny as hell. He loves to rally, so that's obviously kudos. Yeah. He just has what it takes, and I think that Hinchcliffe personally would be the perfect fit at Newman Haas, I hope it happens. Like you said, yeah. I wouldn't mind having two drivers come away with contracts out of the two that were there because, you know, again, more drivers is good because I know that Servia and, you know, I know that Hinchcliffe can be potentially a great driver. I know Servia's already, displayed his talent and everything. But, yeah. I really think Hinchcliffe fits the Newman Haas mold. Look at me.
Certainly out of the two of them. If one of them is to get a contract, I want it to be Hinchcliffe. I like Servia a lot, but I think Hinchcliffe is better upside for the series and for the team. Servia, though, would be excellent with the team, with both of them on there, to be a setup guy and help as a veteran talent.
Oh, I think so too. I think that'd be great.
Going into 2012, all the setups are out the window, and your great setup guys. You know, they may not be the guys they used to be.
Yeah. So. Dan Weldon.
Dan Weldon.
What happened?
I don't know.
Watch yourself. Well, I look forward to it. I can't wait. So, let's see. Is that it for us? Have we rambled enough?
We've rambled enough on IndyCar, so let's jump into Rally Ramblings by Sean.
Yay! Yes. I'll try not to put you to sleep, I promise. No. All right. First big news for this week. One of the Citroën Junior or Citroën. Well, we don't really know what they're going to be called at the moment, but what one would assume to be the Citroën Junior team has sold off one of its seats to a Peter Van. I really think I got it right on this one. Peter Van Merkstein.
Yeah, I think that's Merkstein. About right.
Anyways, I'm sorry if I slaughtered it. That's what I do for a living, is just slaughter.
I'd like to buy a vowel, Pat.
Yeah, right. I'd like to remove this random consonant in the last part of his name that throws everything off.
Just think Meyer. It'll all come together.
Yeah. But he actually came out of nowhere and took one of those Citroën Junior seats. And the thing is this was not part of the plan, man.
No, not at all.
This Citroën's lost the plot. They're supposed to follow what we say for off-season moves and stuff, and they decided not to do it this year. And this Van Merkstein guy is coming in, and he's going to be splitting the car with his dad.
Eh?
His dad is going to be in the car for, I think, three events. Or for a couple events, and then he will be in it for 10 events. And it's much to what Citroën usually does with the junior squad. Obviously, European events, okay. Flyaway races, or flyaway rally, rather, not so much. It's going to be select.
Unless you're giving a nod to the driver who made it possible for Loeb to win a race.
Speaking of which, Rally Jordan's highlights just came up on WRC.com. So if you want to know what we're talking about, go ahead and go on over there and watch the video. But see, now, okay, so Wim Rijkstein, we don't know anything about this guy, right? He's competed at the top level in a Ford Focus WRC. So you have some experience, and he likes the way the DS3 looks. I guess he's excited about it. We don't know to the full extent why he hasn't really been driving, race in, race out, or rally in, rally out, or whatever you want to call it. It really out of left field, but this actually puts into question some of the off-season talk. Because look at it, okay? You've got Citroën Juniors. You have no Danny Sordo because he's going to Mini or Ford, but probably Mini, 99% Mini. But then again, if Van Merkstein can get a ride at a Citroën factory effort, then I guess that just throws everything out the damn window. Really, I think it's one of those things where your guess is as good as mine. But you've got Sordo gone. You've got Ogier moved up to the factory, the big team. Now you have Kimi Räikkönen, Petter Solberg fighting for one seat to partner this Van Merkstein guy. And yeah, I think that this may have just been game over for Mr. Raikkonen, and at least I won't say his WRC career, obviously. There may be some who want to have him. But as far as Citroën goes, I think this was the straw that broke his back. And I think mainly because Citroën only planned on having four cars produced for the championship, and you cannot have Kimi Raikkonen driving one of your cars if you plan on not rushing production, because he will trash some rally cars.
Yeah, this is interesting. You know, as you said, Van Merkstein is probably an unknown unless you're really into obscure rally. You know, it's kind of like if you're into the Indy Lights and the feeder series stuff in IndyCar, maybe you'd know this guy's name, kind of thing. You know, if you're into the feeder rallies and everything like that. But, you know, as you said, only four DS3s coming out next year. At least that's what Citroën says currently. The junior team, the senior team is already set. The junior team has two seats available, and we don't know what's going to happen with them, but they go out and hire this guy. So that throws everything that we were thinking completely on its ear. So do we see a Petter Solberg in the other seat? Certainly I agree with you. No Kimi. I think Kimi's completely gone from there.
And if you don't have Kimi, the only guy you have left is Petter. And there's no reason he shouldn't be in a car.
Reason he shouldn't be in the car, but do you take a Petter and put him on the junior team?
You know, at that point, I think at that point we may or may not have kind of what we had last year with Ogier and Sordo. I think that, you know, Ogier is still developing talent, and I think that if you need the points, depending on what Ford brings, because God knows Ford is going to have everybody else in a car, and I think that you swap Petter. If Ogier is not strong in a rally, then put Petter in the car. I mean, or bump him up and move Ogier down. I mean, I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but I think when you have somebody like Petter on the team, it's not going to matter. I think even with the cars being the way it is, I think that, you know, Petter stands just as good a chance as Loeb, just as good a chance as Ogier with the new setups, or, you know, the new cars. I mean, it's going to be completely crapshoot.
I think he clearly showed that this year when he was getting on podiums in a privateer effort, pretty much.
Oh yeah, I mean the guy was a threat to win rallies in an old C4, dated C4 prepped by him and some of his buddies. I mean, basically, I mean, if he can get factory support, he is dangerous, very dangerous. I'm willing to say that I think in equal cars, I think that he would move the Ford boys out of the picture, and I think it would be a great battle between him and Loeb for the 2011 title.
Well, two questions for you. Number one, if Petter, well, it's for 2011, it's kind of a hard question to ask, but is he willing to abandon his privateer effort to go drive for a factory team?
Yes.
Okay. That said, the second question is, why isn't Monster World Rally Team falling all over themselves to hire this guy?
Now that may, you know, really, that's a good question, because they have money, granted not a ton, but they have money. I don't know what Ford, or not really Ford, but I don't know what M Sport has told them in terms of their, you know, I guess what they're going to be getting. And I think it will be – I think it will just definitely be interesting to see how Citroën's working it too, because I mean, you're right. It's just a great question. Why are not more people not beating this guy's door down? And I don't know if it's because of bad blood with Ford, or if it's bad blood with Malcolm Wilson, or exactly what the deal is. But you would think that this would be a realistic thing. And, I mean, to have that guy – on your team would be phenomenal. But I think I think as a fan, a Ford fan, I'd like to see him on there. But as a fan of rally, I'm going to say that I want to see him in the DS3, just because until otherwise proven, Citroën, you know, Citroen is the best car until shown otherwise, and that means the DS3 in my opinion, and I want to see him in the best potential car to win probably a championship before he goes, because he's just done so much for the sport and been there so much, you know, through the whole entire thing, putting together his own private effort, just is a passionate rally driver, and he deserves a championship. And unfortunately, you know, like you said, why not Monster? I say why not too, but apparently Ken Block and the guys at Monster want to go to a different direction, and that may actually be where Kimi goes if he still wants WRC.
The last thing that Monster World Rally Team wants is somebody to come in there and beat Ken Block on the team. I think that'd be bad for the marketing of the team. But the other side is they really need somebody who can come alongside Ken Block and give him a good thorough rally education at the WRC level.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a Petter Solberg very, very easily. So.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that Mr. Block would be schooled, literally.
Nice. Well, that down, we'll have to see where it goes. We're still waiting for Sordo to come out and announce for Mini. We know it's going to happen. Worst kept secret ever, but something deep down inside, I guess, is telling him to hold on. So, you know, we'll see what happens. It's all to play for in the driver's market, but I think we're about to hit the time when, or here within the next couple weeks, we're going to really start to see it come together for 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So, speaking of 2011,
it's got to sometime.
Yeah. Right.
The season's like a week away or something.
Yeah, right. Off season over. But speaking of 2011, we now have, we have the new TV stuff coming out that the WRC wants to do. We have the Power Stage, as it's going to be called, where the WRC will display a stage. Probably the last stage of the event on television in front of, you know, a world audience live once again, using in-car cameras and, you know, camera setup all about to capture this and bring it into your house.
Live.
Yeah, live. Exciting. Be there.
With the added benefit of points to play for, with 3 points going to the winner of the Power Stage.
Yes.
In addition to whatever points they garner for the event, which would be a max of 25. So a max of 28 for an event. That's different.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's going to be awesome to see. I hope it's on the U.S. channels. I think that would be awesome. And I think it's something they need to do. But... is it going to happen? Probably not, but it's a noble idea.
All versus.
Yeah, no kidding. And then we now have, but we have Jordan. Speaking of Jordan earlier, we have Jordan come out. Their baptism site test is going to happen on the television. They've made adjustments to it, and they have, what do you want to call it? Jeez, I'm really struggling to think right now. They have what they like to call I'm really drawing a blank here. Hang on. This is bad. This has been a bad night.
The length of the stage will be about 10 kilometers. It's being shortened by about 3 kilometers over what it normally has ran in the past.
Thank you.
And obviously that is to fit it more closely into the kind of window the FIA was pushing for this made-for-TV stage for the series.
Yes. Thank you for that. Thank you for the bail. I don't know.
There you go.
I don't know what the hell. I wrote about it on Sunday. I'm sorry. So I was really having a hard time with it. But yes, shorten it 3 kilometers. Give it the points. And it's gonna be a great time. So we'll see what happens. Try to squeeze it into that time window. I really hope it succeeds. We know that Sweden and stuff, Sweden, I think, and a couple others are coming online and saying they'll have announcements soon with their Mickey Mouse stages or Power Stage or whatever you want to call it.
Stage. Yeah. Well, so. At least they have actual points to play for.
Not
just televising the... the ceremonial end of the rally, like the super special stages in the city streets. Okay, that's great. They're really wonderful, but unless you're Yari Matty, you don't lose a position in this.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Maybe it will be the super specials, or maybe it'll be the actual, stage. Who knows?
Yeah.
But it'll be great to see, and hopefully we'll get it here in the States. Let's see. Also on the rally docket is the IRC have come out and announced their 2011 schedule. Actually, they have announced it earlier, but they just finalized it at this point, with Argentina getting a date change and the introduction of a rally in Ukraine. So there you have it. The IRC still expanding as we know it. They've got, I think I said it was like 8 asphalt rallies, like a couple mixed surface rallies, and then some gravel. So, you know, and it'll all kick off with the 100th Monty coming up, here in just a few weeks.
The IRC WRC Invitational.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. This year we've got, from the WRC this year, we're going to have Solberg, PG Anderson in a Proton, and Chris Atkinson in a Proton.
Ooh, Solberg.
Yeah, Solberg's going to win, unless something devastating happens to his car. But he is getting factory Peugeot help, which is why I think he's going to be the first pick for the Citroen seat. So, but it'll be interesting to see. And Solberg's made it perfectly clear that he does not want to go to the IRC, and he wants to be in the WRC. So this isn't like, oh, well, maybe they'll hire Raikkonen and relegate Solberg. No, not going to happen. It's a one-off, just like Hirvonen was last year. And I think even Ogier only did one event in the IRC last year. So it'll be great to see. I look forward to it. Monty will be awesome. We'll have end-of-day wrap-ups on the site, which may be super late because they drive into the wee hours over there. So,
with the high beams.
Yes, the high beams. The huge light pods. Oh, how I love the huge light pods.
You That's need a right. light pod.
That's I would. If I had one of those, I would put it on the Mazda.
Yeah, somebody flashes you their high beams because they think your low beams are just a little too bright. And you just say, okay, spotlight.
Yeah, exactly. Holy cow, who put the floodlights on the car?
You can kill flies with that beam.
Oh, yeah. Cuts through them like a hot knife through butter.
Yeah, the IRC schedule, like you said, it looks like it's 7 asphalt, 3 gravel, and then 2 mixed surface rallies. So that's a good dispersion. And, you know, like we were talking about with WRC, I like the idea of the mixed surface rallies. It gives a little bit more, I don't know, a little bit more for them to think of when they're doing their tire setups and everything. So anyways, especially interesting in the WRC since they have to choose between DMAC and other compounds.
Yes. Michelin's like, we want competition. It's like, well, you've got DMAC. We want competition. Who the hell are you guys?
Jeez.
So, let's see.
But you can put your own name on our tires.
Yeah.
Is it better, right? No, you still suck.
Yes, you're still pathetic.
Oh, man.
Well, let's get into Formula One. Let's get this. It's about time to end because we're on record pace tonight.
Busting our way through the podcast.
Yes, yes.
Landing right now in Formula One, where Felipe Massa has been put on notice, Luca de Montezemolo, that Luca felt like Felipe's brother was driving for the team.
Nice.
What?
That is an absolute slap in the face to the Massa family.
Yeah.
Quote, how does he put up with that?
Yeah, quote, at a certain point in the season, Felipe was fed up and sent his brother for this. Felipe gets 7- for Alonso in the first season in Ferrari. I give him a 9.5, but unfortunately, even he didn't win. What?
What the hell does Felipe, that even mean?
Felipe sent his brother to finish out the season for him. I guess. I mean, I guess this is kind of like when Dimona Zimolo said, you know, when he heard the news that Schumacher was going to Mercedes, he started talking about Schumi's doppelganger, his twin brother or whatever, his twin was taking the wheel, and the real Michael Schumacher would never say anything like this, so this must be Michael Schumacher's evil twin. So apparently, you know, Felipe's brother and Michael's twin are driving an F1, and they've long since retired.
Hmm.
Ah. Okay, what can we read into this besides Demonizella really needs to have his press statements vetted by a PR team?
Yes. Yes, he does.
Mm-hmm. Masa on notice is the best thing I can think of. Masa is, his results were disappointing when you compare him with Fernando Alonso's. And yes, you can say, well, they made him pull over. Yes, they did at one race.
Yeah, but after that,
Maybe others too, but yeah, you're right. After that, Felipe have to play for?
Yeah, well, even after that, if I'm even after the fact, regardless of what's going to happen, clean slate or not, do you think I'm really going to give two bits of crap about really doing anything after that? After, yeah, you know, pretty much demasculating you in front of, you know, in front of the fans and slapping a 151C on everybody. If I'm Masa, I'm saying, you know, something, you pulled me over, you can go F off. I'm not going to drive nothing for you. I'm going to drive as badly as I can, coming up probably on the end of my career. So, you know what? Screw you. And that's what I would have said had they told me to pull over. So,
isn't that how Rubens drove for like 8 years or something?
Yeah, but he's a lap dog too.
Oh, yes.
So it doesn't matter. See, the thing is Rubens never stood a chance at winning a title. Massa showed that he had a chance at winning the title. And, you know, if you're Felipe Massa, how can you sit and deal with this? Team screws you over out of a race. The team screws you over out of a race this year. The team screws you over on a championship just 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just one of those things. I mean, I'm telling you, how does he put up with it?
Bernie Ecclestone said it best, Ferrari provides the clowns, and they have for the last few years. I mean, since the Schumacher, Braun, and Todt trifecta dissolved there, Ferrari has been a shadow of its former self. They stumbled into the championship with Kimi Raikkonen, and that's all that can really be said for the team.
Yeah.
And every chance they've had to perform at a higher level, they've stumbled yet again. This year, once more, you can always go through and say what ifs and 20, you know, hindsight and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, Ferrari gave away the championship again this year.
Yeah. They always
it wasn't theirs to win, but because Red Bull was, you know, doing their own little thing, you know, saying, oh, we're not picking favorites when they were and all that kind of stuff. It opened the door for Ferrari, and Ferrari couldn't capitalize because they had their own problems within the team.
Yes.
Yeah, well.
Well, I mean,
it is what it is. Does Massa really stand much chance next season then? If this is the way the team is treating him right now.
No, he doesn't. He's going to get killed. And I hope he proves me wrong. I really do. Nothing against Alonso, because I respect the way he drove this year. But no. You know, I want to be proven wrong, but no. Ferrari is going to absolutely destroy him. And they're going to start looking for maybe the Fernando replacement.
Yeah.
Fire him and maybe bring in a young gun. They see, because that's the Ferrari thing is, oh, let's just go buy whoever's good. You know, Massa showed some signs of being successful at Sauber, so he's picked up and brought to Ferrari to support Schumacher, mainly because they knew that Massa would be a good lapdog to Schumacher. And then you look at then you see Raikkonen. They buy Raikkonen off the off of McLaren. They buy. They buy Alonso off of Renault, even though I don't think they really bought him. I just think, you know, everybody wants to drive for Ferrari. They never groom talent. They buy talent.
It's talent sitting around saying, the end of my contract is coming soon,
exactly.
Ferrari. Would you like to hire me? I'm cheap.
Exactly. So.
Oh, man. I don't know. And, you know, the thing that complicates this is the vehemence of the Brazilian fans who are just livid that Massa pulled over and really he's been treated as a number two driver this year, and they don't want him to be that number two driver. And, you know, going up to Sao Paulo, some lawyer was saying that he was going to have him leave the track in shackles.
Wow.
if he pulled over for Alonso at Sao Paulo, which didn't happen.
No.
But, yeah, well.
It would have been funnier had it.
Yeah, indeed.
So, well.
Well, going from ridiculous to ridiculous, the Renault team has officially grouped with Group Lotus. They've produced a rather unlikely-looking car from their union, and I'll tell you, it is dang sweet.
Oh, yeah, that car is awesome-looking.
Best livery ever.
on an F1 car.
Yeah, on an F1 car. Seriously, I mean, this puts any Renault F1 car to shame in the last two decades easily. I mean, this car is it's the old players. The old black and gold Renault, black and gold Lotus paint scheme. Very nice with the red Total in plates on the wings. It's just dang sweet. If you haven't seen it, you need to take a look at it.
Yes.
But what does this mean with Lotus buying into Renault, and now we have the Lotus-Renault GP team?
I'm confused by it, to be honest.
Wow. This is 2011 is going to hurt my head.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. You know, what the hell is going on over there? I mean, you've got one company that claims the Lotus name, paints the car green, and has the stripes, and now you have Lotus buying Renault. And I mean, who, just like Doug's article says, will the real Lotus please stand up? Because to be 100% honest with you, I don't have any friggin' clue who it is.
Yeah.
All I know is... Was it Autosport said the real Lotus comes back with the Renault? So are they the old iconic mark, or is it still the British Racing Green Malaysian sensation that's been putting around the track this year?
Well, it's interesting. I don't know if this is an attempt by the Renault team to quell the fires that are going on as the war over the Lotus name continues. But Lopez, the team chairman for Renault, he's come out and said that he thinks neither team really owns the heritage of the Lotus name in Colin Chapman's legacy in the series. Neither team really owns it because neither team is a direct offshoot of it. You know, they basically, one's the car make, and then the other is the guy who went out and bought it from the estate.
Mm.
Whatever the case, I think that's an olive branch, or at least a try at an olive branch, because I really think what's going on behind the scenes is Team Lotus, Tony Fernandez, Mike Gascoigne, and those guys, they've got the rights to name their car Lotus, and they're really interested in the Group Lotus Renault team to buy the name from them. And they're trying to make money for their team in that way. Because what value does it have to be called Team Lotus when you have nothing to do with the car maker and you really have nothing to do with the legacy of Colin Chapman?
Yes.
So it's going to be fun to see how this one goes forward. However, Tony Fernandez was quick to point out, oh, but we already said we were going to use the black and gold paint scheme, so they're like copying us.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Jeez, come on. Seriously? Is that the best you can do? You were green and yellow last year. Why would they pick green and yellow? Or why would they pick Lotus or, you know, Renault colors? Obviously, they're going to go with an iconic Lotus paint scheme. And since you had green and yellow last year, they're not going to use it.
Yeah, again, it's just such a cluster. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, it'll be interesting to see where it goes.
Yeah.
Well, but
I got a preface of that. 151C for everybody.
Yes.
151Cs all around.
Yeah, exactly. We got them on the house for every driver, every team.
Just deal them out. The World Motorsport Council. That's a good enough segue because we're already talking about their forte. The World Motorsport Council met on Thursday and Friday of this past week, and confirm the power plants we were talking about in last week's show. We were talking about for 2013 having a 1.5, 1.6 liter four-cylinder turbo with, you know, boost and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Looks like we're going to get a max of 12,000 RPMs out of the machine. It's going to be interesting to see how this one officially goes when they actually get into real hard numbers other than what they're talking about now. But it's a 1.6 liter with high pressure gasoline injection up to 500 bar, whatever that means. not a gearhead. The engines will deliver a 35% reduction in fuel consumption and will feature extensive energy management and energy recovery systems while maintaining current levels of performance.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, it is F1. They've said that this is a radical departure from what they've been doing. A four-cylinder is not a six or eight-cylinder or anything of that nature. It's not a 12 or a 10. It's way down the list, and it's kind of, you know, it's kind of in the category that just a few years ago we would mock if it was what came in your car. And now we're talking about it being the power plant on an F1 engine. So, other things coming from the World Motorsport
Council. Oh my God, this is
where
funny.
It gets fun. Ferrari, you can go ahead with the team orders. The FIA has decided that the team order rule has been deleted from the articles. However, they strongly reminded you that Article 151C shall remain, which tells teams to not bring the FIA and F1 into disrepute.
I don't get it. I just simply don't get it.
I think all they're saying is don't make it blatant.
Yeah. I mean, the FIA just constantly opens themselves up for this. I think obviously they do it. They almost nearly do this on purpose.
I'll agree.
It's gonna be an issue because the first time Alonso it passes Massa because he's off on the side of the track going, no kidding, you know, coming up to the start finish line to win the race, and then all of a sudden slows down to 2 miles an hour and Alonso goes screaming by, there are going to be some genuinely pissed individuals.
Indeed.
And the FIA has brought it all on themselves because now it's going to be open for interpretation. Now we're going to get a call of the World Motorsports Council and maybe even be lucky enough to hear about another Faxon emergency vote.
Oh, joy. Yes, yes. Well, I think you're totally right in that because as we see with the other regulations we'll talk about in a little bit, the FIA seems to go out of their way to make bad rules so that they can further clarify them later.
Yes.
If you want an example of that, just look at what's been happening over the last several seasons with the safety car regulations.
Oh, goodness.
They can't figure out what to do. They have no clue.
They're like, what are we going to do?
Yeah. I haven't seen the exact verbiage of what they did with the safety car regulations for next season, but they further clarified what happens when you pass the safety car. And if you recall, that was a huge issue this season because their brand new safety car regulations were in place where you were given a gap time to get back to the pits. And as long as you met that gap time, you were fine. But the first safety car came out and Lewis Hamilton passed the safety car and Fernando Alonso said, you know, they'll fine me seriously if I pass the safety car too. So he held station and ended up finishing behind Hamilton, who was penalized for passing the safety car. And he still finished ahead of Alonso, who was directly behind him on track.
What?
So there's going to be clarification on that. And that's exactly what we said. The FIA writes these rules as ambiguously as possible so that they can clarify them later, whether it's because they're idiots or because they like that for the PR of the sport. I don't know.
I don't think that it's very good PR when you're constantly taking your races into the courtroom and not deciding them on track. I don't really care. You know, I really don't care what kind of PR it brings, because that's bad PR. And no PR is good PR like that.
Yeah, indeed. Another rule that they've imposed is they're putting curfews on teams on Grand Prix weekends. So if you're engine blue and you have to work overtime to change the engine, well, you can't. Actually, they're providing certain times. You know, if practice starts at a certain time, then you have to be in, your team has to be out by midnight. Or if it starts at another time, well, you can work till 1 a.m. They'll be able to monitor this because last couple of years they've been putting in this system where Parc Fermé has been moved to the team garages, and they put a special tarp over the car, and the teams had to pay for a camera that the FIA could monitor to make sure that they weren't, you know, working on the car when it was in Parc Fermé. Well, this is a simple extension of that. You put the car in the garage, and at midnight you start monitoring the cameras to make sure nobody's working.
Interesting.
What do I think about this? You've made it impossible for teams to go through a weekend and have a wreck and be able to recover from it.
Yeah, I agree. Because if you look at, what was it? We'll even look at like HRT at the beginning of the year. Their car, they pretty much for the first race, just to have it ready, they were up all night.
Dude, their crew was running around with IVs of Red Bull.
they literally, I think they said some of them had been up for 36 straight hours. That's ridiculous.
Working on an F1 car, 36 straight hours is another thing if you're, you know, one of those guys who's doing like World of Warcraft raids or something like that, Sean.
And I'm going to punch him in the face.
But try do 36 hours when you're working on a technical piece of equipment that you're trying to assemble correctly. Everything goes in the right place. If the spring's not connected to the cog wheel in just the right way, the car will blow up.
No, I'm really going to punch you in the face now.
Okay, thanks.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, no, but I agree. I agree with what you said. Get out the laughs. Come on, just get them out. Yeah, yes, son of a gun.
They've been taking this away from the teams for a long time, so that they can't recover from these sorts of incidents on weekends. They took away the third car that they always had assembled and ready to go. Well, now that you can't have that car assembled and ready to go. So if there's an accident and you decide you have to go to your third car, you have to assemble it from scratch. You can't have already done that. What a mess.
Yeah, have fun with that, guys.
And it's all for cost reduction. How about this? Nobody shows up.
That would be epic.
Well, anyway. The other thing the FIA has decided to clamp down on, and this I'm intrigued by. They've decided to clamp down on driving standards in F1. One of the things that they've decided to make very clear is the track consists of what's between the white lines. Mm-hmm. If your car goes completely off of the white lines, you know, if your both sets of tires go over the white line, they're going to consider it you leaving the racing surface and will make sure that they review what goes on. I'm curious to see how this works. Also, maneuvers liable to hinder other drivers, such as more than one change of direction to defend position, deliberate crowding of a car beyond the edge of the track, or any other abnormal change in direction, shall not be permitted, the new rule states. Okay. Yeah. What do you think, Sean?
Sweet. At least we're kind of defining it, so we kind of know. Because, like, the thing I don't understand is when they come out and they say, okay, we need racetracks. We need to make things more entertaining. How are we going to do that? Mm. Like, you know, now they're starting to kind of define, okay, this is what we want to see. We do not want tilky garbage. We want, you know, we want things where there's going to be, the ability to defend, but still the ability to attack, and the cars are going to be grouped a little closer together. You know, we're going to actually have racing mm-hmm. instead of time trials for everybody where cars get in the way sometimes.
Yeah. Back markers? Yeah, that was also addressed.
Yes, yes. So, you know, you need to, we're moving in the right direction. We're trying to set it up. But, you know, I don't know. We'll have to see. You know, that doesn't change the fact that, you know, the damage has been done. A bulk of the championship still sucks and is not going to change. Now, you're setting them up for a bunch of tracks that you don't even know if you're going to have or not yet. So unless you plan on expanding into areas like maybe having a New Zealand Grand Prix or, Mexican Grand Prix or something like that. I mean, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see, but it's just going to have to be, you know, these people aren't going to make adjustments to it. But, hey, good on you for getting a definition. Thanks for that.
Yeah. I'm just curious about this because, they've decided to try and more clearly define what is the racing surface. They definitively state the curbs are not the racing surface. And if you leave the track, meaning all four tires are off on the other side of the white line, they're saying that you have to they're not saying you have to give away, but they're saying that you can't re-enter the track in a way that hinders somebody else.
And again, that's going to come down to the design, I think, because, you know, what I said was kind of more of, a strategic kind of big picture look at it, just actually being on the track now, it's going to be tough because you have these tracks that are set up. They're not very wide. There's not a lot of room. There's a lot of curb. And, you know, like we see all the time, what is it? And I think Singapore is guilty, Monza is guilty, and Spa is guilty as hell.
FIA is guilty.
And the FIA is guilty for doing it. But if you look at it, you don't know where it is, and that's mainly because of the layout and the way the track is designed. And I think that's something that needs to be taken forward. Is in the future, you know, hey, we need. Okay, this is what we want the racing surface to be, but don't give them 70 miles of runoff. So, you know, Kimi Raikkonen can go blazing out into he's going out into the forest at Spa and then come screaming down the hill at like Mach 3 while everybody else is still at like Mach 1.5 and then go blowing around him. I mean, it's all eventually going to boil down to track construction and design because what's done is done. And it's going to be tough. It's going to be really, if you want to improve the show, if you want to improve the racing, it's going to be tough to do that by confining people into, well, you can't really go over that rumble strip like that. Well, you know what? How the hell else am I supposed to get around him? You know, I've been around him for 20 laps now.
The biggest test of this new regulation is, well, turn one at Melbourne.
Yes. Yep.
Seriously, how are you going to be able to how are you going to be able to police this regulation on turn one at Melbourne? How can you say a car that's left the racing surface and rejoins and doesn't do so in a safe manner, well, they're guilty? Well, that's about every single race on turn one.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It always happens.
So it will be interesting to see how they police this on the first race. Maybe they're just doing the best they can to say you will stay on the racing line if it is at all possible.
I guess I just don't really get it.
Clarifying the rules so that you can't force somebody off the track. Well, I think that that's something that really needed to be in there. It's specious when people are forced off the track, even though they have the outside, which is the preferred spot. But the guy on the inside is coming up because that was his line as well. And it's an interesting argument. You can make it from both sides. But I think it needs to be clarified that you can't force somebody off the track.
Yeah. Well, you can't do that. No, that's wrong.
Well, they still do it.
They do it. Yeah, but.
And unless you're Schumacher pushing Rubens into a wall, nobody says anything.
I know, and that's such crap. You shouldn't have said anything. Leave him be.
Sorry.
No, not you. I'm talking about the FIA. Not you, but the FIA should not have said anything. our plot to get rid of Rubens has been spoiled once again.
Mm. Well, once again, you know, just to reiterate what I said before, the World Motorsport Council goes out of their way, the FIA and F1 go out of their way to make ambiguous rules that have to be clarified multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping that with Jeantot, that would not be the same issue that it was under Max Mosley. I'm concerned that that's not the case.
Yes. No comment.
No comment.
Next.
Let's move on to the American Le Mans series, the International Le Mans series, and the unveiling of the Wicked Sweet R8.
This car is awesome.
Smoking.
That is one of the best looking race cars I've ever seen.
Indeed. Yeah, first of all, it's the Audi R18, a complete departure from Audi's designs. The front end looks somewhat similar. The front nose, for the most part, looks very similar to what the R15 and R15 Plus had. That said, it's a coupe.
Yes.
What?
Right.
On an Audi?
And that's what I said in the article. I was like following the tweet stream and they're like, and it's a coupe. And I'm like, what? I was like, Audi doesn't do that.
Yeah, yeah. Seriously, an enclosed cockpit is complete departure from what Audi has done in the past. But they basically said the ACO rules basically make it so it's a detriment for them to have an open cockpit.
Yeah.
The other thing that is just when you look at the car, it glares at you. The wheel fairings, the wheel fenders over the front wheels are monstrous.
Yes.
And it gives the car this really aggressive, wicked look. And the reason is that the rear wheels are the front wheels.
To an extent,
it's the same tire on the rear as is on the front, the same diameter at least.
Yes. Yes. I think it was just briefly narrower. I think it's just like maybe okay. Under an inch narrower. But it's still the same thing. Still the same thing.
Which is something that's been tried several times, but yes. Everybody ends up abandoning it because of the balance issue with the car.
Yes.
You need smaller tires on the front to get the balance correct. Acura did this a few years ago when they came in with an LMP1 Challenger against the Audis and the Peugeots, but the Audis and Peugeots chose not to show up that year because the economy sucked.
Thanks.
And that project pretty much got mothballed.
Yeah.
And mainly because of the economy, but also there were some design issues with the car.
Design issues with the car. It was running on petrol and not diesel. I mean, it didn't have the engine couldn't take a diesel. But I think what you're about to say, and that is that they didn't really have the money and they didn't really spend it on fixing these tires, is and that you were and I know that you commented on the article and said that you had hoped Audi had done this. And I indeed think that's what Audi has done because, okay, it's like just under an inch narrower in the front, but it's also something Michelin's done that is completely different and is specifically for the Audi and the Peugeot 90X, I guess they're calling it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the compounds and whatnot, there's something about that front tire. Okay, it's maybe similar to the same size, but there's something about it that will make it a lot easier to navigate. I think that that's really Michelin, and maybe not so much Audi and Peugeot, but maybe Michelin trying to prove that theory actually kind of works because it didn't on the Acura, and the Acura just looks silly.
Well, certainly with the larger tires on the front, you get a little more mechanical grip from that. And that was what Acura was going after. They were trying to compensate when they designed their car, they were trying to compensate for the fact that they had a petrol engine. They didn't have the turbo diesel and they really couldn't do a turbo diesel because Acura doesn't do turbo diesels.
Mm-hmm.
So that said, they were trying to compensate for it and making the LMP1 car as an ALMS effort kind of made sense because ALMS runs a lot of tight street courses where the straight line speed isn't nearly as important as the cornering speed and the corner exit speed.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of was, in my opinion, it was tailored towards the LMS, but it really didn't have a chance to show it if it was worth anything because, well, the economy
sucked.
Disappeared that year. And it remains something of a mystery, but I would have to say that with Audi developing it, yeah, I'm not concerned about those tires. They'll have some kinks to work out, I'm sure, as mm-hmm. any car will have, but they've designed this right because it's Audi.
Exactly. Audi doesn't mess up often.
Other details on the car that are striking, but you know, they have to be there. The ACO has mandated that the shark fin be in Le Mans racing, and it's okay.
I think it looks good on this car.
I'm just not a fan of the shark fin. Not at all. But that said, if it makes a performance difference in the car, then that's why it's on F1 cars. So
exactly.
not gonna knock it because it's a performance issue. The fact that the ACO is mandated, I think, is more of an issue of keeping the car from lateral flipping.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Interesting. Car's sweet, though.
Yeah, it is. If you haven't seen the pictures, jump over onto speedtv.com. Yeah. And take a look at their articles on this. They've done, I think, 3 currently.
Yeah.
And, wow, wicked sweet-looking car.
Oh, yeah. It's just gnarly. So, all right. Well, that's all we have for this week. Next week we'll be coming back, and we should have Doug. And are you ready for this, Mike?
I'm scared.
You should be. No, I tweeted earlier today. I said that we had made a crucial off-season signing to further our stuff, and I think that person is going to be on the show next week briefly.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, so
glad to hear that.
Yeah, we are going to have our new addition on the show next week. So that will be the official unveiling, and it's not. Don't get excited. We have not hired Al Michaels or Marshall Pruitt,
Robin Miller,
yeah, or Robin Miller. But again, going back to the site's roots, we're getting the fans. We're getting fans who will write and cater to the fans, and I think that this person will do a fantastic job of that. In fact, I guarantee it will happen. So we will have them here next week, kind of like almost a Stig unveiling, only they haven't done anything.
Nice.
So, but we'll see what's up. So I'm really happy about it, and it'll be great. So that's all we have for this week. So say goodnight, Mike.
Good night.
And we missed you, Doug. We'll talk to you next week. And I myself am going to be out of here. So everybody have a good night. See you soon.